Brücke. The podcast cooperation between Sam Edin and Migration macht Gesellschaft. Bridging the gap.
Hello everyone and welcome to a special edition of the Brücke, where our mission is to bridge the gap between cultural differences. Before I go into today's episode, I said it's a special edition because it was triggered by an event and we had to touch on this issue, or it's a recurring issue, but something that just happened and I felt it's important that we hear the voice of someone who has just gone through something really horrendous, something the world has been facing for decades, for as long as mankind has existed. But we've made progress. We're not where we used to be. Things have improved, but things can always be better. And there's just this inspirational quote from Rosa Parks that always comes to mind when I think about issues like this. It says, "To bring about change, you must not be afraid to take the first step. We will fail when we fail to try." And on that note, I want to just introduce my guest today, Bolaji. I call him BJ. And he actually came to one of my book readings, and that's how I got to know him. And I actually found out that we actually grew up in the same neighborhood in Surul area.
Yeah.
And now he's in Germany. So I would just first of all want Bolaji to introduce himself and tell us a bit about himself, his journey, how he got to Germany.
So hey guys, this is Balogun Bolaji Adebayo on the mic. I was born on October 11, 1996. In Lagos, Nigeria. I already have a bachelor's degree in geology and mineral sciences, but I've always wanted to be an engineer. So I decided to, you know, find another course in industrial engineering here in Germany. And yeah, I've been studying industrial engineering here and everything has been going fine until recently.
So yeah, I've just been overwhelmed by what you shared with me before we started the recording. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, it's overwhelming to think that we do know we face issues of racism.
Yeah.
And most of the time we always want to attribute it and say, yeah, older generations and things are changing and all, but to actually find out that people as young as 15, 16, 17, 18 yeah. are actually still perpetrating such hate towards a fellow human being, because there is no such thing as race. It's yeah. just a humankind. Basically. It's just a social construct that is called racism. And I just want to emphasize how I feel that Bolaji has been brave enough to be here after facing what he faced 2 days ago, and he actually defended his thesis on the same day. But I wouldn't want to go too further into it. Bolaji, how did this all start? Because you said you live in a part of Munich and you just started living there 2 years ago.
In Max-Schwaben.
Max-Schwaben. Could you just give us context, the backdrop? You got to Max-Schwaben. Did it just happen that they saw you overnight? Just give us a back context of how this whole thing. So if you could take a journey and cast
yeah,
your mind back.
Yeah. So one thing I've gained to understand is wherever you go, you cannot escape racism, you know. But I feel like in Germany, when people say, oh, there's no racism here or everything, I feel like it's more systematic, or people are racist but they keep it to themselves. So moving forward to my story, yeah, like he said, I moved to Max-Schwaben around October 2021, around this time 2 years ago, and there have always been a set of guys at the train station close to because there are two entrances, the main entrance and there's a back entrance, you know, close to a gym. And every time I walk in and out of the station, there are a group of teenagers at the station. And I can tell when I'm walking past you and you're making comments about me. You know, I can tell when I'm being talked about. So there was a particular day when one of these boys came up to me. And maybe because he saw I was flamboyant or maybe portraying being effeminate or something, he walked up to me and asked me, "Are you gay, bro?" And from his intent, I could notice that he did not have any positive intent, like his intentions were not pure. So I said, "How is that any of your business? You know, it's none of your business. You can't just walk up to somebody you don't know and ask him about his sexuality or question his sexuality." So I said, "How is that your business?" So at that period, I just walked away and he also walked away. But ever since that incident happened, I could tell that each time I walk in and out of the station and I see these boys there, they're always making like funny comments about me, you know, laughing. But I'm an adult, like I said, I'm an adult and these boys are teenagers. I cannot be seen arguing with these boys in public because that's not cute. It's not classy. I'm an adult and these boys are teenagers. I can't, you know, because of these little things, I cannot react because you've not said it to my friends. you're just making side comments within yourselves.
What side comments do you think they were making?
There was this one day I was going for a black event at Pandora at Osbanov, and I tied that same green scarf. I tied the green scarf and looking like Tupac. And I was walking one day and I could tell they were like, "Hey Tupac, how you doing?" You know, laughing. I never paid them any attention. But I felt, it feels like because I don't say anything, they kept doing it. You know, they kept doing it and they thought, oh, they can bully me.
So were they saying it in a way to tease you?
Definitely. They were saying ways to tease me, you know, to get a reaction, to look back and, you know. But I never even stared at them. I always just look front, or I always look on my phone, or I just take a call.
And this is 2 years ago, right?
This has been 2 years ago.
This is 2021.
Yeah, so more than a year.
Okay.
I can't pinpoint the exact time or month it happened, but it's been going on for a very, very, very long time.
Okay, so that happened. So how did it move forward? Was it like, there any trigger that made them continue? Or what do you think were things that made them keep on pushing at you?
Because of my silence, because I wasn't saying anything, because I just kept walking, I let them laugh at me. Like I said, these people are kids. I can't go up, walk up to them and say, "What did you say? I know you're talking about me." I can't do that. So in Germany, the same rules don't apply to us. You know, there's some things you can just have to lay low for, things like that.
How do you mean the same rules don't apply? Have you...
The same doesn't apply to us. I'm an immigrant, you know. If this whole situation, if it was reversed and they were the ones to report me that, oh, I did this and that, they would take my case very much seriously and I would have the risk of, you know, being deported. You know, I'll just wake up one day and see myself in Murtala Mohammed Airport.
Okay. So, but for much more context, do you recall a situation where you could clearly hear some of the hate words or racist words that happened that somehow it was building? Do you have any of those specific incidents that you could recall that if you look back now, it's like one trigger moment?
Yeah, so not until this happened, I haven't heard them, you know, calling me this, calling me that. But I just know when they are talking about me. Okay. And there are also some instances when they try, you know, they yell at me, not or try to call me. Like I said, that first time, Tupac, you're like, "Hey, bro," you know, maybe because of the way I appear or because of how flamboyant I am, they think they can try and bully me. So there was not an instance when I heard them say this and that to my face until recently.
So recently what happened?
So I was walking at Allianz Arena on Sunday. Bayern Munich was having a match with...
October 2023.
Yeah, Sunday, 8th of October. I had to walk at Allianz Arena, Bayern Munich versus Freiburg.
Yeah.
And I finished walking at exactly 11:30. So from 11:30, I was already on my way home. So I got to Max Schwaben train station at 12:30. So it was already Monday morning. So it was already late. It was dark. Definitely there are street cameras, but not all the cameras on the streets work. So it was relatively dark. So there I was walking out of the station. And three out of the whole group, because they usually go in groups. And three out of these boys were sitting right next to the Parkplatz, you know, when I usually come out through the elevator. And this time when I was passing, this is now when they decided to be very verbal. They were calling me nigger to my face. I'm like, "Hey nigger, hey bro, why are you gay? Do you want to spend the night with me? Do you want to stay with me?" You know, teasing me, because what's all this?
So probably they never spoke out because it wasn't dark.
Exactly. Probably they never spoke out because most of the times, like I've had occurrences with them, it was in public. It was during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But this time it was at night. So I think scenarios have changed and now they have more confidence. They have more confidence, you know, to lay out these hateful thoughts.
Okay. So and they called you names and...
They called me all sorts of names. Most of them I can't even remember. But they called me so many things because there was a long walk, like from their line of sight to when I could actually turn into a corner when they don't see me anymore. So as I was walking throughout, they were calling me names. So it got to like half distance and that's when they started throwing stones at
names,
me.
Names, nigger.
They were calling me nigger so much. Nigger, this nigger, gay bitch, nigger gay, why are you gay, bro? He even said he has some black friends. You know, he said he has some black friends, but he's still calling me nigger. If you can call me a nigger, then you can call your black friends a nigger also.
Okay.
But I think the main problem he had with me was because of my sexuality.
Okay.
You get? But that doesn't mean you also have the right or the audacity to call me a nigger to my face.
Yeah, so... As you guys went on the street, they kept on following.
So as I was walking, they kept on throwing stones. So I think those stones that they were throwing was not like the peak of
your
of,
breaking point.
Was like, it was exactly like my breaking point.
You took it too much and you couldn't bear it anymore.
Yeah, like in my head, I'm like, look at what these kids are doing to me. A full grown adult. My birthday was in 2 days. I was going to be turning 27. I'm now 27 years old. And these boys are not even up to 20. I'm older than these boys in more than 7 years. Look at what they are doing to me, you get? And I've been allowing them doing do this, but I felt like at this point, I had to put my foot down. You know, I had to let them know that you can't keep doing this. Because I keep walking past it, doesn't mean you can continue. So at that point, I actually called my best friend first, but he was sleeping at that time already. You get, I called someone to at least talk me out of it, or to, you know, someone, a familiar voice, to, you know, to just calm my mood or calm my nerve. But I was boiling, I was raging at that point. So at that point, I decided to go back. I'd already walked a distance from them, but I decided to go back to let them know that they cannot keep doing this to me. So on my way back, I saw a spitzy bottle, and I took it. And I walked towards them. I broke it and I told them, like, call me a nigga one more fucking time and I will show you how a nigga fights. Because at this point, I was ready to risk it all. I was ready to let these boys know that because I may look this and that does not mean you can oppress me. Because I see these things online. Where white people are being, where a black boy is being oppressed by white teenagers. And at that point, it felt like I was that black boy in that scenario, and I'm letting these boys oppress me. And every time I see videos like this on Instagram, I'm always mad, I'm always angry. So why should I not stand up for myself?
Yeah, and it's been more than 1 year. So
it's been more than 1 year. Why should I not stand up for myself? Because at some point, like I said, I used this glass bottle, this cup here. Like, if you keep testing my patience, if you keep drop of water in a bottle, no matter how long it takes, but if it's 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, that cup is going to run full and it's going to overflow. So that night was definitely the time I said to myself, look, you need to put your foot down. You need to let these boys know that you cannot fuck with me, you know?
So then you took the spitzy bottle.
So I took the spitzy bottle back and I broke it in their front and I told them, call me a nigga one more fucking time. I wanted to hear that word again before I took action, you know? And they never said it again that night, because it was that word that was triggering my anger. So I wanted to hear that word again one more time. Then that's when I know that, yes, I'm going to hit you, I'm going to swing. You get? So when I was there, I was like, call me nigga one more fucking time. And they were like, oh, this, oh, that's why you gay boy. Like, you want to fight? So they ran off to take a weapon. There were three this time. I think two of them this time were now like serious. Those two boys were the ones violent. So one of them went to take a long stick.
So did you know they were actually going to take a stick?
I knew.
Okay.
I knew they were going to take a stick because from the way they were running to go pick something up. So he had something already waiting. So I'm guessing this is not the first time he's fighting with somebody. Because if you can go somewhere exactly to know you can pick this weapon up to fight, then that means you've been doing it before.
Okay.
So he went to get the stick and the other one went to get a brick. You know this Dangote brick now, this cement brick that they use in making buildings and everything.
Okay.
So he went to get a stick. And they came to corner me in the front, because when I saw them running, I started walking towards home, you know, walking towards the direction of my house. So as I was walking, they came to corner me in the front. There was a playground close there. And I was like, oh, you still want to fight? Call me a nigga one more time and I'll show you how a nigga fights. I said that again, like, call me a nigga. Oh, so we're just there, you know, he was there swinging. The guy was throwing the block at me, but unfortunately that block was too big. It was too heavy for him, so there was no momentum. So I was able to dodge the block, but the one with the stick, he was the one that I had to, like, you know, be more careful of, because that stick can injure me. So at some point, as I was defending myself, I was also walking, you know, trying to lose them, because definitely I don't have numbers. It's 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
So I was also trying to dodge them. At this point, I started saying, leave me alone. Leave me alone. Why are you always fucking with me? Leave me alone. And then he goes to repeat again that, oh, he has black friends, that's not his problem. But why are you gay, bro? Why are you this? Why are you that? You know? And I was still there defending myself. Then I was targeting that iron rod. Then the guy with the brick, he also came now. So it was 2-1. He also came. He took the stick from the other guy. And he had more intent to, you know, hit me. That other guy was just saying, why are you gay, bro? Why are you? I have black friends. He wasn't really hitting me. But until that other guy came, he took the stick. And then that's when he now started, you know, swinging.
Okay.
So in the attempt of swinging, I said I needed to catch that stick. Because honestly, what I wanted to do was take that stick and use it on them.
Yes.
So because I was holding a bottle, that bottle was broken, you know, more than half. So for my own weapon is more close range. You know, I have to be closer to you to use it against you.
Yeah.
Even though I did not even use it at all. But the guy was using a stick, so I had to keep my distance. So the moment he hit, I came closer. And when I came closer, it hit my head and my hand. It hit my hand because I tried to grab it.
Yeah.
But it already hit my head also.
Okay, so that was where you got the bleeding from.
Yeah, that.
So
that,
that's where you have the stitch.
That
now
is where that is where I have this stitch over here.
Did they stitch the wound or was it?
They didn't stitch it. It was not so deep, but it was deep enough to bring out blood because I was bleeding profusely.
Okay. Yeah, I saw the video of the blood all over the floor.
Exactly. So I had the stick on my hand and I was bleeding profusely. So those two things made them scared. And they ran off.
Yeah, so now you're bleeding. What did you do next? Did you still go home? Did you get medical attention?
At this point, I'm just bleeding on the streets. I was shouting, so definitely people heard me on the streets because I could see some lights getting turned on.
Okay.
You know, there was even the place where it happened, there was a CCTV camera close to it. I went there the next day to ask if this camera is working so that there can be like video evidence, you know. But the guy unfortunately said it wasn't working. And I looked at it also. The camera did not look like something
that was working.
That was working exactly.
Yeah, so how did you treat your head?
So I was just walking home with my bags and my head on my hand on my head, you know, trying to force the wound so that I don't bleed out, you know, trying to apply pressure so I don't bleed out. I live in a Vege with like somebody else.
Yeah.
And he's also black, thankfully. So I knock on his door and he sees me, like, definitely asks what happened, but and I gave him the whole story. And the next thing he told me to do was to call the police.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to even say that. So you called the police that same night?
Yeah, I called the police that same night. And the police asked, definitely, you know the German police, they know everything about you, because the moment he just called his name and, you know, the moment he said what his name was, they told him his surname already. So they know where we live already.
Okay.
So the next thing the police asked was, do you need an ambulance? Like, is the damage that bad? Do you need an ambulance? And I told them, yes, I do, because I was still bleeding. So the ambulance came first, and definitely they took my Ausweis, my identity, before they helped me, like, stitch the wound, plaster it a little bit. And they told me they would take me to the hospital, but we have to wait for the police.
Okay.
So the police came shortly after, and they asked a few questions, you know. Where did this happen? Even the weapon, the iron rod that they used, I took it home and I gave it to the police. The police have it right now. It's in their custody. And they took a picture. They removed the plaster.
The plaster to have
and,
a clear
and
picture.
And they took a picture, you know. And the next thing they told me is I'm going to follow the ambulance to the hospital for them to treat my wound and they will get back to me.
And the funny thing about this whole situation was you're saying that the next morning, or that same day, you had your master's thesis defense.
That same day, I had my... So all this happened late at night. So, you know, if you know how the S-Bahn works, the last train is usually at 2 a.m. in the morning. If you've used the Krankenwagen, the ambulance before, they only take you to the hospital. They don't bring you back.
Oh.
Yeah, so they took me to the hospital at like 1 or 2 in the morning. And when they finished, like, you know, attending to my wounds and everything, I had to wait till 4:30 in the morning to use the first S-Bahn back to Max Schwabing from Edin this time, because they took me to the nearest hospital, which is in Edin.
Yeah.
So I had to use the S-2 now back to Max Schwabing at 4:30 in the morning. So I got home at 5 and I tried to get some sleep, you know, because my thesis defense was 2 p.m. that same day. But as I was closing my eyes, I just kept replaying that moment over and over and over again, but I couldn't sleep. But one thing was, because I've stayed awake the whole day, my body was tired, so I could tell that eventually I was going to fall asleep. But I just waited. Every time I closed my eyes, I was just replaying that same scenario. When the moment he hit me like this, that moment when I saw blood on my face, blood, my whole jacket, everything was spots.
Wow. And you still managed to go for your defense?
Yeah, it was online, thank God. So I just had to wake up. I only slept like 3 hours. Then around 9 in the morning, I woke up and started preparing for my defense, because the PowerPoint presentation that I had to present for 15 minutes, I still hadn't finished it. You know, so I still had to tidy it up that same day and, you know, prepare, you know, write some place cards, you know, to...
I just, like, it's... Because I'm trying to imagine the psychological...
yeah,
the psychological issue at that point in time, mentally processing what just happened to you earlier that day. Your mind is working differently. You're thinking about your thesis defense. All these things happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
And somehow you're still able to push through to do your defense.
Yeah, for that defense, yeah. It's because it's been scheduled for like 2 weeks before.
No, I get, but it still doesn't matter because it's so much to process at the same time.
Yeah, personally, I just wanted to get it over with. I did not want to post. I didn't want to. I had definitely very good grounds or good reason to, you know, to extend or postpone it. But personally, I just wanted to be over with. I just wanted to be done with it that day. Like, and I was very confident because everything I did, my thesis, I did myself. So there's no question that you asked me that I don't know.
Yeah, it's just still kudos because you were able to manage the mental stress and the physical stress to still push through to do the thesis.
Yeah.
But looking back now, the police itself, from what you're telling me, they were helpful.
Yeah, the police were quite... So there is currently an update. We're getting to the end of the story. So like you said, after my thesis defense, I still had to work that same day.
You still had to hustle.
I still had to hustle. You know how it is. If you want to ball in December, this Christmas, where is the money to see it? You know, you have to hustle. And so after my defense, I had just like 1 hour to prepare. I made something to eat. I couldn't wash my face because of the bandages. They told me to leave it for 4 days, but I definitely had to wash my body. So I went to shower. You know, cleaned up. I wore white and black as it was, and there I was going to that same station again. And I could see these boys from afar.
They're still there.
They're still there.
Don't they have a home or something?
I don't know. I don't think these boys go to school because they always linger at that station. And they're the ones causing problems there because I've seen the police having issues. You know, at that particular station, there's a house living opposite it. I've witnessed a police raid there before. Like, they were literally like a SWAT team, you know, going in. So I feel like those boys are notorious and the police is already aware of them. And they know, I feel like they were scared because they came up to me and they came in groups this time. One of them came up to me and tried to apologize.
What you mean tried to apologize? How? Were they apologizing for? What were they apologizing for?
So he could tell that I saw him because if I'm being totally honest, me, I was ready for round two. The moment I saw him, I called my neighbor.
Yeah, you have to be alert because psychologically, you have to be able to protect yourself.
I was ready for round two because the moment I saw him, like I said, I saw him from afar. The moment I saw him, I started calling my friends. I called my best friend. I called my neighbor. I called somebody else. And they were ready to come, you get.
Okay.
But in the process of calling them, I think he saw me. You get. Then he now walked up to me and now said, "Bro, come, let's talk." I'm like, "Who is your bro, the fuck?" You know. And then he goes on saying, "Oh, he's sorry. That's sorry about all this happened. But because I came at him with a bottle, and because he has black friends." I'm like, "What do you mean? Because you have black friends does not mean you can call me a nigger."
No, but what I want to understand, he was saying it was because you had a bottle. That's
Became violent. Exactly, because I initiated it, you know, trying to gaslight me that way. As if you've not been, you know, looking for a reaction.
Yeah, but did they apologize for actually using
racial slurs? They did not do that. So that's what I'm saying, that apology was not genuine. That apology was fake because...
It wasn't even an apology.
Definitely, they're just trying to make amends.
They're not even making amends. From my perspective, from what you're telling me, it's more like they're only telling you, "You know what, Bology, there's a routine. You moved here almost 2 years ago. We use racial slur at you. We curse you. We make fun of you. And you ignore. This is how things work."
Exactly. So that's what even looks
when
like.
You reacted, that's why we now, things escalated. So they're just telling you, dude, if you hadn't reacted, everything would have been fine. You take the abuses like we normally do and you move on. Tomorrow we continue. So it wasn't an apology because it's only telling you if you are taking it the normal way you take it,
you know,
you wouldn't have been injured. No. So it's not an apology.
Then he goes around to say that, "Oh, the next time he sees me, I can go." Like, what do you mean by that?
So
that,
yeah, so have, now
have,
you,
have you been
you,
holding me captive before?
No, you have a hall pass because you've exactly. fought back and now they're not going to pick on you anymore.
You know.
And it's just horrible. But from now, at least you have a legal statement and the police have something on record. And but I believe the police are following up on the case.
Yeah, so I could also tell because when I was that night, when I was still going to the hospital, my phone was not reachable. My neighbor called me to say, "Oh, the police were trying to call me because they went to the place where it happened and they were trying to look for my blood." So I'm guessing maybe these boys saw that the police are already on it. They now try to, you know, make amends, try to apologize. Because I could tell from the group, I was reading the environment. I saw some of them at the back, you know, forcing him to approach me, forcing him to apologize. So I could tell within them that they know they fucked up. So yesterday, the police invited me also to give my statements at 10 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
So
okay.
I went to the police station yesterday and I basically told them everything I'm seeing now on this podcast. And they showed me a list of suspects.
All right.
They showed me like at least 7 people. And thankfully for me, one of them were in that picture. So for you to know that the police are aware of these boys. They know these boys. They are notorious. I'm sure this is not the first time this is happening. I'm sure that weapon that is in their custody right now has been used on somebody.
At least I'm even happy that the police has been able to help, because I know we're not in a perfect system. And me personally, I do not like to throw everyone under the blanket. And what I mean by throw everyone under the blanket, people have had racial abuses and racial experiences. But just because 3-4 set of ignorant people are racially abusing someone, and it's very quick for people to just say Germans are racist. You know, you put everyone under one huge blanket. I think psychologically, humans, we tend to fixate on negative experiences more than positive experiences. So I'm just saying that because one or two ignorant people are doing the wrong thing doesn't make everyone fall under that category, because you and I can first and explain, or I felt that way because I'm Nigerian, and sometimes you have a lot of Nigerians that are doctors doing super good things across the world and all that. But 2 or 3 ignorant Nigerians perpetrate a crime somewhere, and all of a sudden they say Nigerians. And I always like, you can't put everyone under that blanket. So all I'm trying to say is I'm glad, like, first of all, the police was able to step in. And I know people have had racial profiling from police, like police harassment. But it doesn't go to say the whole of the police force is like that. So you can see that 1 or 2 bad apples doesn't necessarily mean everyone falls under that umbrella, because most time people would just next thing say everybody, or Germany, like you fall under an umbrella. Because so I'm just happy basically that the police were able to help and been able to show you that we're working on this, so you have a feeling of it's not like they just took you there and there is no follow-up. So at least I'm happy there's a follow-up and something is coming out of it, and you also can see it, and you also feel like the support coming from the system.
I definitely do have to commend the police, and I also noticed that they were looking for something to pin on them, because when I was giving my statements in the police station, they bought a translator, because something, when I'm angry my German is not the best, so they bought a translator, and I could notice the questions he was asking me were like more direct. He was like, before this, my attackers hit me, did they say anything like, oh, I want to kill you, this and that? So tell that they were looking for a, you know,
maybe they just, I don't want to even say, since these people, like, I think they're just trying to get the facts as clear as possible.
Yeah, as clear as possible. But I definitely do know that these boys have maybe pending cases with the police.
Yeah, so hopefully something is done. But I just want to say thank you for sharing your story. And one of the things that we intend to do on this podcast, through Migrator Magazelschaft, we're currently in collaboration or talking to another organization that helps with issues like this about racial abuse, verbal and physical assault and different things. But the problem is most time a lot of us do not know that there are these platforms.
Yeah.
So we want to try and push these platforms out so people know where to go to. Because one of the major things I know is a problem is people face this racial discrimination and issues on a daily basis. But looking at Bolaji's situation, for example, you're facing this situation when you go out, if you don't know who to reach out to, if you don't know what lawyer or what agency to reach out to, you, the first thing you think about is, how do I get the lawyer? And the next thing you're thinking about is, can I afford it?
The lawyer.
Where do I see the lawyer? Then the next thing you're thinking about, the next morning I have to do my thesis defense. You know, then I still have to go to work because I have to pay bills. I'm a foreigner, like I'm an immigrant, and my visa is tied to my studies and this. So there's so many things happening at the same time that you just see it and say, do you know what? Let this thing slide. I'll deal with it some other time. True. But what happens in the long run is you have pent-up energy, pent-up negative energy buried inside of you. And like you said, you just get to that melting point. So hopefully we're working on something, and I would lay more emphasis on it, because I believe in the next episode of the podcast, we're going to get someone from this agency that would give us more insight how to reach them, how people can easily get the help they need, legal aid and all that, lawyers to give advice. Because it's really important in this situation, if Bolaji somehow things went differently and you used the bottle against them, no one would remember that they've been taunting you for a year and a half.
Definitely. Like, if the stories were changed,
the case would have gone that you went violent.
Definitely.
So I'm hoping that we'll be able to push the narrative to a point where when this happens for the first time, irrespective of your race, irrespective of your color, when you're getting oppressed like this, when you're getting either bullied in any way, you're able to reach out to people for help, that you do not wait until it gets to that point where you're pushed to the wall and you might do something that you regret. So I just want to commend you for coming up and speaking up, and hopefully we'll be able to do something. Not hopefully, definitely. We will do something, and we'll get the already Migration Magazine shaft has reached out to the other organization where we'd have more information on how people can reach out to them, legal aid, lawyers, and how to go about such issues. Because there are a plethora of examples. Maybe the person is an asylum seeker.
Yeah,
and he's having these issues. He's worried and he's thinking, oh, if I go to the police, they might look at my status. They might look at this.
Yeah,
and out of that fear and panic and not knowing what to do, you just repress it and you say, do you know what?
Let it slide. Yeah.
But it gets to the point, like you've gotten to your breaking point. But some people might not be as fortunate as you are. And when they get to the breaking point and they, out of annoyance, hit the person and the person falls, he bleeds and something happens, you're going to be charged. And no matter how you explain that you've been facing this,
you know,
discrimination for a long time, there's no evidence. There's nothing on record to show that it's just your word against their word.
Exactly.
So we hope that it doesn't get to that situation and we can provide a platform that people can reach out. So just in case you're going through any of these issues, you can first of all also look at Migratioma Gesellschaft.
Yeah.
And you can send them a DM and they can also point you to the right direction. You can also send me a DM directly on my Instagram handle at Samedane. And what I could do, I will do as best as I can to direct you to the necessary platforms that can actually help you. So I will just hand it over to Bology to give us any last words, and also thank him for coming on this podcast and sharing his experience, even though it's fresh. And thank you very much.
Yeah,
and
thank
happy
you very
birthday
much
again.
For having me. Thank you very much. Just like everything Sam has said, like, you don't have to wait. You don't really have to wait to speak up for yourself. And yeah, you don't have to wait for the first or the second or the third time. Honestly, I wish I had done this earlier, because at some point now I feel powerful, because the next time I see them, I'm going to look them in the eye, and you know, at this time, I'm the one with the power. I'm the one with you know. I reported you guys to the police, and yeah, just be you. Just take care of yourself, and don't allow, you know, people walk all over you. And at some point, you just need to be brave and stand up for yourself. And that's what I did to myself, and I'm definitely not regretting this. Or in the future.
Thank you very much. So I'm still going to end with the same quote I started the show with. To bring about change, you must not be afraid to take the first step.
Definitely.
We will fail when we fail to try. So just keep trying and take the first step, and you would feel as powerful as Bology is feeling now and emancipated. So thank you very much. It's the Bruke. See you soon, and all the best.
Thank you.